In Job 10, we've got an example of where Job comes out with some stuff about God that is really quite wrong. Verse 3, is it good to you that you should oppress, that you should despise the work of your hands? That's cast away. That you should despise or cast away the work of your hands and smile on the counsel of the wicked? Well, this is just not right. This is not true of God. Job feels that God has cast him away, just like the exiles did. But God will not despise nor cast away his people. This is very clearly stated. And although Job wanted to cast away his life, and that's the word used by Job in chapter 9, chapter 7, just as God's people cast away his covenant, God would not cast Job away, and he did not cast Israel away, even though they cast him away. So in his depression, he charges God foolishly. He says that you smile on the counsel of the wicked, and you think it's good, cool, smart, that you oppress me, the work of your hands. You despise me. And yet God despises not any. So he says the wrong things about God. And yet Job 1, he begins as that man was perfect and upright. At the end of the book, God says to the friends, you have not spoken right about me as my servant Job has. And you wonder how on earth God can say that when Job quite clearly has stated things about God that are really quite wrong. And at times Job seems to justify his words by saying, well, who wouldn't speak like this when you're under the sort of affliction that I'm under? Well, you could say that God is simply imputing righteousness. And yeah, that is one of the lessons of the book of Job. But when you look at the range of words that are used in Hebrew for how God deals with human sin, yep, you've got forgiveness, you've got reconciling sin, atoning for sin, and you also have the word overlook. I think that God overlooks sin. Not all sin, but I think that is a category of sin that he clearly does overlook. Job is in depression. He's under huge stress. And so he does speak inadvisedly with his lips. So did Moses, and God judged him very harshly. But in this case, God overlooked it. And remember, Solomon says that you should not pay attention to every word that you hear about yourself, because you also have cursed the king in your bedchamber. You also have said things that would be better overlooked, and you wouldn't like it if your words were sort of transcripted and poured over. And God overlooks, and we should also overlook. And, you know, God in Isaiah criticizes the Jews because you make a man an offender for a word. And yet, on the other hand, we are told repeatedly that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, that our words are critically important. So I would not wish you to go away with the impression that, well, it doesn't really matter about the odd cussing of people or whatever. Well, yeah, you know, Job did, and Job said nutty things, and God sort of overlooked all that. Well, that is God's prerogative to do that, and we are not to take that prerogative at all with ourselves. But I think you do see here that, like it or not, ultimately, God does operate some kind of situational ethic. He does accept that Job was under provocation, and so he spoke wrongly, and yet he does not apparently pay attention to that in the very final judgment upon Job. Now, Job, of course, has repented and laid his hand upon his mouth and said, I spoke things I shouldn't have spoken. So I'm sort of raising these issues because they are raised here. I said that ultimately there is a situational ethic. Ultimately, yes, in the sense that God can operate and apply that if he wishes in some cases. It's not for us to do that. Once you start doing that, once you start saying, ah, but I was provoked, well, therefore it was understandable that I said this or said that. Well, how often can you do that? You know, once an hour, once a day, once a week, once a year? Once every 10 minutes, you know, you start to turn ethics and morality into an endless shade of grey, and you can't tell right from wrong, and you're just justifying yourself. We shall be judged by our words. We are told that. There's a huge emphasis, particularly in the New Testament, upon the significance of our words in the Day of Judgment. We shall be judged for our words. And yet you see here God accepting that a man is under pressure and overlooking this. And that, to me, is his prerogative. I raise these issues because they are raised here in the book of Job, but I would not wish you to go away with the idea that, oh, it's okay, it's all a surface-level sin, it's just a few cranky words. No, because words are important, very important to God. And yet he can operate a way of choosing in some cases to overlook. What should we do then? Well, I think we should be like he is. You come back at the end of all these discussions to God's basic character, as revealed to Moses in his name, Yahweh, that he is eager to forgive sin. He is eager to overlook. He likes forgiving. It's somitia. It's what he's good at. And this is how we should be. And it's very difficult, but that is how we should be, because that is how God treated Job, and that, I guess, is how we long for him to treat us, to overlook. And this overlooking of sin, as I say, God deals with sin in a number of different ways, and it is not for us at all to consider that sin, therefore, and rash words are therefore not important. You only have to think of Moses speaking inadvisedly with his lips and being banned from entry to the land. I'm not at all justifying that. I'm saying that God, from his perspective, does overlook. He has this capacity, and I think he exercises it in the case of Job, and we ought to do likewise.